This is the Winchester Talking newspaper for the week ending Friday, November the 15th, 2013. Hello and a very warm welcome to this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking newspaper. We'll be reading extracts for you from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending 15th of November 2013. Our editors this week have been Christine Aston and Fredina Hearn. I'm Ros Lydiard, your presenter for today, and this week your readers are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Gerry Tuff.
Hello.
So, what's on in the region today? Well, concerts over the next week at Winchester Cathedral on Thursday, November the 21st at 7 p.m. It's the Beethoven Symphony No. 9 and Nielsen Springtime on Funen, performed by the Winchester Music Club, Winchester Glee Club and the Quiristers, with the Winchester Music Club Orchestra. Sounds very good. The tickets are £5 to £35. You can book those at the Winchester Cathedral box office on 01 962 857 275. 01 962 857 275. And on Saturday, the 23rd of November at 7:30, an Ashton Singers concert in the Winchester Chapel, College Chapel, College Street. And it's a programme including Howells, Britten, Brahms, Bach and Vaughan Williams in aid of Winchester Church's night shelter. Those tickets are £12.50 and they're available from 01962 857 275. 01962 857 275. And in theatre, Winchester Chesil Theatre is kicking off again with a Noel Coward play, Present Laughter. That starts on Saturday, December the 7th and runs through till December the 14th. Performances begin at 7:45 with one matinee on Saturday the 14th at 2:30 p.m. Those tickets are available on 07527 471 539 or at the website of the Chesil Theatre, www.chesiltheatre.org.uk. Now, I'm advised here by one of our team that those tickets at the Chesil may well be very nearly sold out. So if you're interested in going, well, now is the time to book. And differently, the Welsh National Opera are at the Mayflower from Tuesday, November the 26th to the 30th, with a programme which includes Anna Bolena and Tosca. You need your tissues for that one. Full information about tickets and times from 0238071 1811. That's 0238071 1811. And, of course, coming up very soon, we'll be giving news of all the seasonal entertainments and activities going on in and around the county. A magical time to look forward to. The Christmas lights are on in Winchester. They look wonderful. And speaking of lights, we're into lighting up time now. For the week ending Friday the 15th of November, the sun will come up at 7:23 and lighting will begin at 4:18 p.m. And on Wednesday, the 20th of November, the sun will come up at 7:31 a.m., lighting up at 4:12 p.m. Now, as you know, if you've got friends or anyone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with your recording, please telephone Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. That's 01 962 862 826 and Lynn will be pleased to help you. And of course, if you want to skip any particular item on this recording, you just press the forward button on the top of your Sapphire player to move on to another track. Now we're on to main headlines this week, and the first will be the Royal Hampshire County Hospital could lose out. River Park plans eroding trust in local politicians, and veterans and residents remember the fallen. And Claire, if you could give us the first headline story, please.
Royal Hampshire County Hospital could lose out. People are being asked for their views on a major shake-up of care, which could see the downgrading of maternity and A&E units at Winchester's NHS Hospital. Health bosses are considering centralising some consultant-led services in a new emergency hospital north of the city, which would take some services from the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Trust, HHFT, which runs the RHCH, Andover War Memorial Hospital and Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital, has been drawing up plans since October 2011. They argue changes are needed to keep services safe and financially viable in the future. Mary Edwards, Chief Executive of HHFT, said, "Clinical evidence shows that some aspects of hospital services will need to be centralised in one place. We are asking people what matters to them about hospital services to help shape plans for how services will be delivered in future. The new acute hospital would have consultants on site 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and access to specialist equipment. As previously reported, clinicians have proposed to centralise consultant-led maternity care, specialist baby care, inpatient children's care, and blue light emergencies such as heart attacks and major trauma. But this would leave Winchester with a midwife-led maternity unit for natural births only and walk-in unit for less serious A&E cases. There would also be increased travelling for relatives, which can cause problems and expense, especially in rural areas. At present, about 3,000 women per year give birth at the RHCH, which has the full range of obstetricians, paediatricians, anaesthetists and midwives. Now people are being asked what is important to them under five different scenarios, including giving birth and emergency care. Questionnaires are available on the website www.hampshirehospitals.nhs.uk/yourhospitals. Mindy Noble, chairman of the Maternity Services Liaison Committee and a National Childbirth Trust counsellor, urged locals to take part. She predicted fewer than 500 women would choose to give birth in a standalone midwife-led maternity centre at the RHCH. A lot are looking for reassurance that there will be an obstetrician to give help if needed. You can't have an epidural or a caesarean section in a midwife-led unit. Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP Steve Brine has previously called for the RHCH to keep the full range of maternity services and emergency care. But now the Tory MP says some compromises may be needed. "My aspirations for health services locally haven't changed. I want safe and sustainable services that command the confidence of those who use them and the clinicians who work in them." The initial consultation ends on November the 30th.
River Park plans eroding trust in local politicians. Council leader refutes claim that public meeting was shambles. Trust in local politicians has been damaged by the issue of the proposed expansion of Winchester's main leisure centre. Opposition city councillors alleged that public confidence had been eroded over the possible development on the cricket pitch at River Park, revealed by the Chronicle earlier this year and greeted with strong protest from people living in Hyde. The City Council is launching a public consultation from Monday, November the 18th, over the future of the leisure centre, as well as the possibility of developing a new one at Bar End and refurbishing the current centre. Councillor Robert Hutchison, for the Liberal Democrats, said at Council last Wednesday, "A great deal of public trust has been lost in their process, and the main reason the public meeting at the Guildhall on September the 26th descended into shambles was not that questions only came from one part of Winchester. It was quite clear questions came from across the district. The main reason it descended into shambles was that people didn't trust what they were being told." Leader of Winchester City Council, Councillor Keith Wood, disagreed. "I do not accept that public trust has been lost. It is that sort of remark that causes problems of getting the true message across. If some councillors did not use this as a political football, we come out with a better answer at the end. I don't understand why he thinks that the meeting was a shambles. A large number of people with a particular agenda dominated the whole meeting. Those people who wanted to speak were not allowed to do so because they were shouted down. Why stand up to be shouted down when nobody is going to listen?" Councillor Wood said, "We sell 600,000 tickets a year at the leisure centre. Who is speaking up for them?" He added, "It won't be an easy decision. We have been consulting on River Park for several years, and I think we are reaching the end. I know that some councillors want more information. Consultations have to have an end date when a decision needs to be made. Further delay will increase costs and possibly prevent the council from doing anything." Conservative councillor James Burns said, "Whilst views of the residents living locally are very important, the issues affect the entire district, and members should balance all considerations, not just local ones." Councillor Wood said, "As far as Tesco, the landowner at Bar End, is concerned, we have made several attempts to get in touch before the meeting took place. Tesco PR people got in touch very quickly, and since then we have been in discussions with them at officer level. We have not had a response from them. We're going to write to them to set out our position. Meanwhile, civic campaigners want answers to questions over the various options. One option, proposed in a report by Savills to the council, states the building would occupy most of the area of the existing cricket pitch, resulting in complete change in character of this part of the site from open recreation ground to built development. The City of Winchester Trust is calling for more research, including developing land at Bar End before a decision is taken. In a statement, the Trust queried the effect of increasing the size of the centre and doubling the size of the car park off Gordon Road. It also asks that if Bar End is chosen, how much of the cost could be offset by selling the River Park site to developers. The public exhibition runs from 1 p.m. on Monday, November the 18th, to Monday, December the 2nd, at the River Park Leisure Centre and the Guild Hall. Staff will be on hand to talk to visitors on Tuesday and Wednesday, November the 26th to the 27th, 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Guild Hall. The four options are a new build at Bar End, a new build at River Park, either A, using the tennis courts, artificial turf pitch, and a strip of land alongside, or B, using the tennis courts, artificial turf pitch, and a significant part of the existing leisure centre site, or refurbish the existing centre.
Veterans and residents remember the fallen. Hundreds of veterans and residents gathered at the cathedral as Winchester fell silent to remember fallen war heroes. It was a crisp, clear morning for Remembrance Sunday, and the service was led by the Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend James Atwell. The Dean said it was a day of huge significance, not just for the military, but for the whole country. He urged everyone to remember those who have fallen in the two world wars, but also in more recent conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan. He was joined by a host of dignitaries, including Dame Mary Fagan, the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, and the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Ernie Jeffs. Those gathered were reminded of Winchester's status as a military town, as the first lesson was read by Brigadier Alan MacLeod, commander of the Winchester garrison. The sermon came from the Chaplain-in-Chief and Archdeacon for the Royal Air Force, the Venerable Ray Pentland, who said, "For those who serve in our armed forces, remembrance is not one day of the year, but a fact of everyday life. Today is also about the partners who grieve and the families who suffer. We live in a world that still struggles with the evils of terrorism." Afterwards, the congregation moved to the War Memorial for the wreath laying. Soon after the two-minute silence, the last post was sounded from the cathedral's balcony. The ceremony ended, and veterans stayed back to mingle and reflect. Martin Hutton, 58, of Wales Street, who served with the Royal Pioneer Corps, said, "People need to come here and remember those who died years ago, so that we can continue to enjoy the life we have today." Dave Sumsian, 56, of Selborne Place, Stanmore, spent 8 years in the Royal Engineers and 2 in the Intelligence Corps. "We have this to make people aware of the sacrifice that was made by a hell of a lot of people for the freedom that we now enjoy," he said. On Monday at 11 a.m, a two-minute silence was observed, with veterans joining the Mayor of Winchester on the steps of the Guild Hall. Old soldiers were not deterred by the grim weather, and road workers on the Broadway downed tools to pay their respects. The epitaph was read by Councillor Derek Green, Chairman of the Royal British Legion's Winchester branch. He said, "We always get a good turnout, but this year has been amazing. The service on Sunday was the best attendance I can remember." Councillor Jeffs had joined other Royal British Legion poppy sellers in the High Street on a rainy Saturday morning to help raise money. Councillor Jeffs said, "One woman came up to me and said she had family in the forces and wanted to thank me for helping the appeal. It's such a worthwhile cause already, but when something like that happens, it makes it even more rewarding." The appeal raised more than £43,000 in Winchester in 2012, and Derek Green, Winchester RBL branch chairman, said it looked like another successful year, despite 2 tins being stolen. He said, "It's a shame. We only had 1 tin stolen last year, but 15 were taken the year before. But everything is going well so far, and there are several pictures of the crowds at the memorial on the sunny Sunday and of Councillor Jeffs in a wet High Street with cadets Hannah Phillips and Chris Needham when they were selling poppies."
Well, those were the headline stories, thank you all. Now we have the death notices, and after that Claire will be reading Christian comment for us. The first announcement is Boisclair. Sandra, née Radmore Boisclair, formerly of Winchester, died in Bishop's Waltham after a long illness on the 6th of November.
Fane, John Fane, passed away at home. His funeral has taken place.
King, Christine, née Edmonds King, after a short illness on the 10th of November, aged 88.
Neil, Audrey, née Betteridge, Neil, widow of Jack, passed away in the New Forest Nursing Home on the 31st of October, aged 85 years.
Timpson, Jean, died peacefully at home on the 6th of November, aged 86. And we'll have Claire now, please, with Christian Comment.
Which today is headed A Poignant and Memorable Epitaph, and is written by Rosemary A. Baker. On Remembrance Sunday, we were driving in Scotland and listening on the radio to a historian commenting on some research that had been done on the First World War. A soldier writing home from the trenches about the death of a friend said how utterly tired and weary his friend had been, and how they were all were. Indeed, when he heard of his death, he almost envied him the rest and peace he had now found. For him, the noise of the guns of war was no more, and he could sleep. No guard duties or fighting, for which he had to keep awake. He could sleep forevermore. This made the saying, "Rest in peace," so often used of the dead and put on tombstones as an epitaph, particularly poignant and memorable as I reflected on it. The phrase, or the initials, is commonly found on the graves of Catholics, as it is derived from the burial service of the Catholic Church, according to the Tridentine Rite, where it appears several times in the Requiem Mass. The words seem to originate in the book of Isaiah, chapter 57, verse 2. And this verse has been found in Hebrew on gravestones dating from the 1st century BC. This verse speaks of the righteous person who died because he could not stand the evil surrounding him. A recapture of these words, read as, "Come and rest in peace," has been transferred to the ancient Talmudic prayers in a mixture of Hebrew and Aramaic of the 3rd century AD. It is used to this day in traditional Jewish ceremonies. The phrase in English was not found on tombstones before the 8th century. It became common on the tombs of Catholics in the 18th century, for whom it was a prayerful request that their soul should find peace in the afterlife. When the phrase became conventional, the absence of a reference to the soul led people to suppose that it was a physical body that was enjoined to lie peacefully in the grave. This is associated with the Catholic doctrine of the particular judgment, that is, that the soul is parted from the body upon death, but that the soul and body will be reunited on Judgment Day. I don't suppose many of us stop to consider these doctrinal issues when we arrange funerals, inter ashes, or visit graves. It is enough to reflect and remember. The point of doing this on Remembrance Sunday and Armistice Day, the actual date that the First World War ended, is that we remember why particular people died, in trying to bring peace to this country and to the world as a whole. Rosemary A. Baker.
And now we're going on to Letters to the Editor, and we have no less than 9 this week. Robin will read the first, please.
And the first letter is from Heidi de Quincey of Winchester, with the title, "Theatre Offers Such Opportunity." "I am a frequent theatre-goer, often but not solely at the Theatre Royal Winchester, and I am interested in Keith Webb's letter in last week's paper. I am neither well off nor specifically informed, yet I delight in the presence of our own local theatre. I fail to see how his previously proposed larger venue could not also have required funding. Winchester is not the West End. Commercial theatre struggles as well and cannot provide our local theatre's varied programme, which is both of popular and sometimes of minority appeal. Is this not the charm of theatre? I have sat in the Theatre Royal in packed and patchy audiences of various ages, and I consider this to be one of the experiences of live theatre. I have also seen some of the best names of comedy and stage. I really cannot imagine how our compact Winchester could fill a larger venue more successfully. My concern is for the theatre itself in an age of screen-based stimulation. I urge readers to risk booking a seat for something that may sound a little experimental and give thanks for a place in our midst that offers such an opportunity. Heidi De Quincey, Victoria Road, Winchester.
And another letter about the Theatre Royal comes from Christopher Gordon and is headed HCC's Major Role in Saving Theatre. Phil Yates, in Letters October the 31st, is spot on about the knife edge the Theatre Royal was on and the dedication of those who saved it. He lists key contributors to the eventual purchase and mentions other donors. I feel obliged to mention one major, curiously unidentified supporter and donor, Hampshire County Council. When I became County Arts Officer in 1977, the plights of the Theatres Royal in both Winchester and Portsmouth were near the top of my inherited problems to help solve, with the Nuffield and Solent People's Theatre Companies in Southampton. When the time came to purchase the theatre, Hampshire acted as an equal partner with Winchester City Council, which was politically, let's remember, somewhat divided on the issue at the time, more urban-rural than party political. To reach the point we happily are today, there was an equally crucial subsequent initiative by the County Council that made the whole project much more viable. I worked closely with dynamic theatre manager Jeff Howard to negotiate the purchase of the two shops next door to the theatre in Jury Street, a greengrocer and an Armley surplus shop, both in a somewhat sad state, I recall. It was Hampshire Recreation Committee, chaired by the redoubtable Councillor Maurice Jones, that okayed my recommendation to provide the grant to buy these two properties, to give the theatre the space to make the conversion and future operation a more practicable, professional possibility. Christopher Gordon, HCC Arts Officer, 1977-85, Corns Close, Winchester.
Christine E. Madison has written a letter entitled War Encouraged by Those Who Gain. It is a little known fact, but one which has huge consequences for the UK, that 298 of the world's banks and financial institutions invest almost $314 billion in companies involved in the production and maintenance of nuclear weapons. This includes those involved in the UK's Trident nuclear weapon. It is time we realised weapon production and war itself is encouraged by those who gain financially. Also, of course, many people in our fighting forces think they need the constant supply of new, vastly expensive equipment. Surely we've lived long enough on this planet to understand that wars mean destruction and that peace means progress? We need a new kind of politician to change our direction, to save humankind from inevitable self-destruction. Christine E. Madison, Botley Road, Curdridge.
The next letter is from Tony Stevens and has the title A Pat on the Back for Stagecoach. I'm not one to sing the praises of Stagecoach, but I would like to compliment them on their efforts to maintain the bus service to the Springvale area of Kingsworthy after the recent storm. When a tree blocked Worthy Road, an enterprising individual at Stagecoach Winchester rerouted the Spring bus service via the A34 and A33 to at least provide a service for folk in Springvale and Church Lane and get people into work on such a difficult day. So well done, Stagecoach, and keep up the good work. Tony Stevens, The Pastures, Kingsworthy.
And now a letter from James Hall on the vexed subject of the recreation centre. Who's the NIMBY now, Councillor Wood? Councillor Wood repeatedly insists opposition to his scheme to concrete over playing fields in River Park is motivated by NIMBYism, confined to a few Hyde residents with a private agenda. To oppose the scheme is not NIMBYism. There is opposition far and wide, and Hyde folk would be just as appalled if anyone proposed to build on the water meadows, Oram's Arbour or Cathedral Close. And perhaps our sympathies might even extend as far as the delightful village of Sparsholt. In June, Councillor Wood heroically and successfully implored planners in his own constituency of Sparsholt, one of the greenest villages in Hampshire, to reject a plan to build two houses and two bungalows on a paddock in the centre of the village. If we let this go ahead, it sets a precedent for the rest of the district. There is no identifiable need for these houses. An unsustainable increase in traffic was one of the issues. It sounds strangely familiar. It's wonderful to see that Councillor Wood appreciates the importance of green spaces in the middle of the idyllic village where he and his voters reside, even if the paddock is only frequented by privately owned horses. It would be good if he extended the same sympathy to the human and avian, canine and aquatic residents of Winchester and the hundreds of users of the playing fields. He and his out-of-town colleagues seem to want to turn this great city into a car and concrete wasteland like Basingstoke and Southampton. Think of that lovely paddock and horses in Sparsholt. James Hall, Arthur Road, Winchester.
Predatory pricing of extreme kind is the heading for this letter. Having been led to expect from recent media coverage that our electricity prices would rise by up to 10%, I was astonished to receive a letter today from our supplier, Utility Warehouse, informing us that our rate for daytime electricity would go up by over 25%, while the rate for nighttime electricity would rise by over 38%. The same letter claimed that the average price rise for Utility Warehouse customers was 6.9%. This is an example of predatory pricing at the most extreme. Alastair Lang, Home Lane, Sparsholt.
In his letter, Philip Dowson of Mitchell Diva says, EDF sweeteners won't turn our heads. EDF plan 14 enormous wind turbines on farmland north of Winchester. The 10 parishes most directly affected have unanimously rejected the scheme, principally by virtue of the impact on spectacular landscape loved, among others, by Jane Austen and William Cobbett. In the case of Wanston, a survey found opinion more than 5-1 against EDF. With this strength of feeling, I am surprised to read EDF is backing an organisation called Hampshire Energy Group in their plan to bring EDF pylons into community ownership. The overwhelming majority on and around the proposed site do not want their landscape blighted. So it must be a delight for EDF to associate themselves with the said community by spinning their largesse in offering Hampshire Energy Group a stake in the development as reflecting their community spirit. EDF aim to fully exploit weak legislation to feather their own nest with a net negative benefit, trading landscape for negligible power output to local people. Hampshire and the UK as a whole. It is a shame that well-meaning individuals at Hampshire Energy Group are allowing themselves to be used as a fig leaf by one of the big six energy giants. Locals don't want this scheme, So why would they entertain any form of financial participation? If EDF believe that they can turn heads with sweeteners, they underestimate the integrity of the community whose environment they are currently attacking. Philip Dowson, Mitchell Deaver.
Julie Green is asking for memories of the Royal Victoria Hospital. With the First World War commemorations due to start next year, I'm asking for memories of people who worked or came into contact with the Royal Victoria Hospital at Netley. I'm researching the graves in the cemetery and would be very pleased to hear from anyone who has a story to tell. Maybe you or a relative worked there. Please get in touch at jd.green@outlook.com. Julie Green, Johns Road, Wolston, Southampton.
This letter from Mrs. Welsh is headed Satellite Car Parks, the Way Forward. A growing resident population will mean greater need for car parks, not less. So can we stop talking about building on them? We also don't want any more cars choking up our city. So satellite car parks are the answer, making the cattle market and Chesil Street essential assets. Encouraging use of car parks on the edges of the city means drivers can visit and exit without having to drive round the one-way system. This is surely the only way to address pollution levels in Winchester, as well as making it a pleasanter, less congested place. In my vision, we would have key satellite car parks near the end of each arterial road, but closer than the park and rides. Each would have a free electric road train shuttling people into the centre every 5 minutes. The navette is commonplace in the mountain resorts of Europe. Satellite car parks served by road trains would be the Cattle Market, Chesil Street, a new one at the foot of Eastern Lane, and one in St Cross Road, plus something accessible near the end of Romsey Road. The police headquarters, perhaps? I would also close Middlebrook Street car park, an ideal spot for a park for shoppers and visitors to take a break. Winchester deserves more open spaces and beautifying. St George's Street would be closed, except for the navette, buses, taxis, delivery lorries, and cars bearing a disabled badge, parents with children, and residents. Yes, another initiative stolen from Siena, Italy. The aim is to arrest the traffic before it even enters the city and make the satellite car parks a more efficient option than entering the city centre by car. The luxury of driving around the city centre must be given up to improve the quality of life here. If in any doubt, stand in Jury Street and watch traffic chugging up St George's Street and ask yourself, who are all these people? Where have they come from? Where are they going? And why did they have to come through here? The simple answer is that they are there because they can be. Mrs. B. Welsh, South Down Road, Shawford.
Now, do you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle? Well, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That number again, 01962 860 836, or you can email them news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, all lowercase, or you could write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And we we're moving on to historical items now, and I'm starting off with 200 years ago, November the 15th, 1813. And this one is headed, Salmon Blocks Water Pipe. The inhabitants of Newgate Street, London, and its vicinity, having been much distressed by a want of water, a person was employed to open the pipe, when to his great surprise, he discovered that a salmon, 2 feet 11 inches in length, and of proportionate circumference, was found therein, and which, being perfectly fresh, the operator believes would have been alive, but for a blow which he accidentally gave it in opening the pipe. It is evident it must have been very considerably increased in size during its confinement, as there is no possible ingress to the pipe but through a valve at London Bridge of 7 inches diameter, which has a bar across the centre. I wonder if they ate that salmon. I hope they didn't. And we're moving on now to 100 years ago from Jerry.
Guilty of begging in High Street. And this is from November the 15th, 1913. Winchester City Bench. William Corbett, ship's trimmer, pleaded guilty to begging in High Street. Police Constable Penny stated that at 5:50 on Tuesday evening, he noticed prisoner, of whom he had previously received complaints, enter a shop in the High Street and saw that he received something and then left. Witness ascertained he had asked for a piece of bread. He overtook the prisoner and asked him what he had gone into the shop for, and he stated he had gone in for a piece of bread. Prisoner told magistrate he was on his way from Southampton to London to join a ship. The bench discharged the prisoner, who was given a shilling. And a second item. Nothing has been heard from the Home Office with reference to the man Penny, under sentence of death in Winchester Prison for the murder of his mother at Copythorne. But it is too early yet to have expected to hear anything with regard to the jury's recommendation to mercy. In the ordinary course, provisional arrangements would have to have had to have been made.
And from 50 years ago, on November the 16th, 1963, the title of the first item is Call for Gas Store Underground. The problem of keeping up gas supplies during peak periods in the winter months would be overcome if gas could be stored underground, Mr. N.W. Gardiner of Reading told members of the Southern Gas Consultative Council at their quarterly meeting in Southampton on Friday of last week. He went on to allege that the scheme to store gas underground at Chilcombe near Winchester had been mishandled, with the result that it had to be withdrawn. Now there has to be an Act of Parliament to put the scheme through. I cannot help thinking that someone could have dealt with the matter in a more rational manner, he added. And the second item is a letter to the editor. Sir, why free education in this affluent society? Why pauperise the rich? Millions are spent on education, yet the majority of children remain completely uneducated. So I was horrified to hear of the Robbins Report, proposing to lengthen the time of free education, which will send the rates sky high for people who cannot afford motors, television sets, refrigerators, washing machines, etc., because they have to pay for the education of the children of parents who can afford all these things and in many cases would like to pay to have their children educated. Say, a shilling a week for each child.
25 years ago, November the 11th, 1988. Vandalism at Leisure Centre. Winchester police are investigating acts of sabotage at the city's brand new River Park Leisure Centre. Winchester CID were called to the centre on Wednesday following the latest in a series of incidents of deliberate damage. The water supply to the slide stopped on Tuesday night, while the swimming pool was closed after the water system was interfered with. Staff at the centre have also found cables cut and air vents closed. These acts of deliberate damage were revealed at a meeting of the Recreation Centre Working Party on Friday. Recreation Manager Mr. Bill Ronan said, "We are taking measures to ensure that the person or persons responsible are caught as quickly as possible." And our second paragraph, FWAG, Hampshire's Farming and Wildlife Advisory Group, went to East Hampshire for its November meeting at the Queen Elizabeth Country Park. Chairman Harry Braunton reported a level of public interest in the campaign to save the barn owl, but reported that experts say there is little chance of farmers giving up using the second generation rodenticide. This is proving lethal to barn owls. He felt the problem was in game reserves, where keepers put down grain in field margins and then had to use rodenticide because of the pests that were attracted.
We're going to move on now to Hampshire Chronicle's roving reporter, where they ask people on the street their opinions. It's Your Say, Please, from Robin.
Broadcaster David Dimbleby, 75, has revealed he has had a tattoo. We asked, does this mean they are becoming more acceptable? Dawn Bridge, 47, housewife of Park Road, Winchester, said, I hate them. My daughter said when she was 18 she thought of getting one, but I didn't agree. They're so permanent. I know you can get them removed, but that often looks worse. Carl Foster, 19, student of Stanmore Lane, Stanmore, said, I think they're more for young people, although I probably wouldn't get one. You get a lot of people who get them without thinking about it, which I think is a mistake. Lynn Salisbury, 66, retired journalist of Sarum Road, Winchester, said, I think they're probably okay if they're small ones in small places. But I think they're too often a case of done in haste and repent at leisure. Giacomo Di Lullio, 19, student of Walpole Road, Winchester, said, I think they look good. I don't have one, but I would like one. I'm just waiting for one that means something to me so that after a few years I won't regret it.
Now it's editorial comment from the Hampshire Chronicle. It's headed this time, Hospitals History May Not Be Enough. Health chiefs are consulting the public over the future shape of hospital services in Winchester. The cynic might say it will make very little difference, as managers at Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust have already decided what is best for patients. They say evidence shows it is best to centralise specialist services so consultants can provide round-the-clock cover. The shake-up is part of a move away from district hospitals. But the Hampshire County Hospital, founded in 1773, has a long and proud history, and proposals to reduce its services will upset many. Few would argue major trauma and heart attack victims should be treated at specialist centres, even if it means travelling a few miles further. Currently, many of the most serious emergencies are transferred to Southampton University hospitals. But maternity care is different, not fitting into the acute hospital model. Under the proposals, women who currently give birth in Winchester may opt to have their babies in the new emergency unit in case they need an epidural or other medical help. But nothing nothing is decided. It's up to people to make their voices heard if they want to save Winchester's Labour Ward with the obstetricians and a co-located midwife-led birth centre. And now we have first person, please, from Jerry.
First person this week comes from Judith Hennigan and is entitled How I Need These Little Forays into the Real World. Supermarkets confuse me. Every week I push a trolley round my nearest store, brain dizzy with excitement. Or possibly it's because shopping is a mid-distance activity and I can't decide whether or not I need my glasses. The only way to cope is to switch to automatic pilot, piling in the usual suspects, seduced by special offers, and almost always forgetting the loo roll. This week, as I wandered along a row of jam and tried to recall if I had any at home, I bumped into a friend. "They've changed the signs," he said, staring quizzically at the ceiling. "I can't find my favourite aisle. Where's nuts and well-being?" This made my day, of course, but it also got me thinking. I don't do my food shopping online because I stare at a computer all day for work and need these little forays into the real world to accost people I know and take my cue from whatever they're buying. But there's an awful lot of information about my purchasing habits stored on my loyalty card, so why can't some of it be used to guide me through my non-virtual experience? Don't tell me this already happens, because so far it's not helping. For example, Tesco recently made the headlines for quantifying the amount of food that we all waste. Well, bagged salad is my default vegetable on nights when I'm teaching and it's pizza again for supper. But 68%, we're told, is never actually eaten. That's an awful lot of lettuce. Maybe the packaging should carry a warning. Never mind the traffic light system, my personalised label might wag its finger saying, "You know they never eat the purple bits." Then there's the problem of too much pasta. Instead of selling me pet insurance, one of those cheerful salespeople could have a quiet word. "Remember, you've only got two children at home now." Then offer me a tissue as I have a little weep. Products containing gelatine could be cordoned off as I approach. I'm not a vegetarian, I just don't fancy it much, while a discreet hand on my arm to guide me past the biscuits would surely save a lifetime on the hips. Loo roll, of course, requires flashing lights and a loud klaxon blast, while a cheering, "Nearly there," sign somewhere near the dog food would do wonders for flagging morale. What I'd really like, though, is a treat at the end, a pat on the back, or maybe an elf to load it into the car and fetch me a glass of wine. "So why don't you do it online?" ask my children. "Well," I tell them, "if I didn't go to the supermarket in person, I wouldn't have met my lovely friend who made me laugh about nuts and well-being and gave me an idea for this column. And later brought round a jar of homemade jam. Delicious, digitally untraceable, and not a label in sight."
Thank you, Jerry. We have one item from Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. It's headed, "Chris can't resist a new challenge." Winchester's civic campaigner Chris Webb has been celebrating the end of a 15-year struggle to get recognition of Sherlock Holmes' link with the Black Swan buildings. His other major interest, the Hockley Viaduct, is nearly completed, but the finishing touch still has to be done. Memorial plaques will be unveiled next year on the two signals on the structure. One will go on the original signal, now little more than a metal stump at the park and Ride End. The other will mark the signal that was placed on the viaduct last year. Next year marks 70 years since D-Day, when the viaduct played a crucial role, carrying some 16,000 military trains in the 12 months leading up to the invasion of France in June 1944. Chris is now turning his attention to completing a book on the history of his home road, Southgate Street, awash with history stretching back to Roman times. It was the front line in the siege of Winchester Castle in the English Civil War, two of Winchester's foremost schools, Peter Symonds College and St Swithin's, were founded there. I'm still hoping to get the history of Southgate Street written. It's in draft form. Well, thank you, everyone, and that concludes the regular features chosen for you this week. Now, Claire has the first of the general news items, so over to you again, Claire.
Council paves way towards 20 miles per hour limit for city centre. The biggest change to traffic in Winchester in decades are now on public show. The map with this article shows the proposed 20 mile an hour speed limit throughout the city centre. An exhibition has been held at four venues: the Tourist Information Centre, the BID offices in Parchment Street, the Discovery Centre and the Brooks Shopping Centre. The new limits would be introduced on all the main routes into the city centre: Wales Street, Blue Ball Hill, Magdalen Hill, Chesil Street, Southgate Street, Romsey Road, the railway bridge by the Upper High Street, Stockbridge Road, Andover Road and Hyde Street. The proposal also covers most of Hyde, and it is understood the measure could be implemented by next April. But national motoring organisation, the Automobile Association, has warned against reducing speed limits on main roads. Last month, the Basingstoke-based AA warned that 20 miles per hour limits on arterial routes, such as North Walls, could be detrimental to business in Winchester. But there is widespread support for them on both the city and county councils. Staff from Hampshire and Winchester Council were on hand to discuss the proposals and answer questions on Tuesday at the Discovery Centre. Currently, 20 miles an hour limits only apply in Parchment Street, some of the Brook streets, and around the Cathedral. At the council meeting last Wednesday, Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for Neighbourhoods and Environment, said there was unlikely to be any effect on air quality. Councillor Warwick added that the police had no objections to the scheme, but they reaffirmed that they could not commit to enforcing it, apart from during routine patrols. A scheme in Portsmouth had seen reduced road casualties, added Councillor Warwick. Victoria Weston, City Council portfolio holder for Built Environment, said, "These proposals for 20 miles an hour limits in the city centre represent a significant change for Winchester, and we are keen that everyone who is interested has a chance to view the proposals." Sean Woodward, executive member for Economy, Transport and Environment at Hampshire County Council, said, "The proposed new 20 mile an hour limits are part of a wider pilot that has been introduced to address the concerns of local communities and test the effectiveness of 20 mile an hour limits in residential areas. The backing of local residents is vital if the new limits are to have an effect, so I would encourage people to view the exhibitions and have their say." The City Council will also be writing to key stakeholders about the scheme this month and advertising proposals formally with a public notice after the exhibition, probably in the new year. 20 miles per hour limits are to be introduced soon for the Winchester estates of Winnell, Highcliffe and Stanmore. Hampshire County Council has received £150,000 from the local Sustainable Transport Fund, though it is likely to need only half of that, and will work in partnership with Winchester City Council to implement the scheme.
City agrees museums merger. Winchester councillors have unanimously agreed a merger of their museum service with Hampshire County Council. a newly created Hampshire Solent Cultural Trust would operate museums such as the City Museum in the Square in Winchester. Civic chiefs believe the new charity would be cheaper to run and better placed to obtain future funding. Rob Humby, Deputy Council Leader, told the Council last Wednesday that the Trust would be able to make the most of increasingly limited resources, but also enable more of Winchester's historic collection to be available to the public. The Trust would be run by an independent board, partly made up of city and county councillors. Lib Dem and Labour councillors supported the move, but Labour leader Chris Pine said it was vital the new trust maintained its outreach work in poorer communities. Tory councillor Stephen Godfrey said it is important we allow the museum service to flourish, which we have not been able to do because of the way we have cut the budget again and again and again over the last 10 years. That is the future unless we back this measure. Lib Dem councillor Simon Cook, who in the 1980s and early 90s ran the Winchester Museum service, said, "Staff have seen the service gradually deteriorate. They see this as hope. But we have to keep our eye on the ball. My problem is that I do not trust the county council."
Catapult yobs leave trail of destruction. It looks like a bullet hole. Those are the words of one victim of a night of vandalism in a Hampshire town and nearby villages hit by drive-by catapult shootings. John Robinson Family Butchers at Stockbridge was one of the many businesses and homes targeted by yobs shooting at windows with a catapult from a car being driven round the area on Tuesday and Wednesday nights last week, leaving victims with hefty repair bills likely to run into thousands of pounds. Dozens of car windows were also badly damaged, and pebbles were found inside the vehicles that were hit. Peter Robinson of the award-winning Butchers said whoever hit the shop window took aim. "It's got to have been done by a catapult because our glass is so thick and reinforced. It looks like a bullet has gone plumb through the centre. The window was in the middle of the three. Whoever did this must have stopped the car and taken aim. A car parked next to my house had a pebble on the back seat and the window was damaged," said Mr. Robinson, revealing that those behind the attacks returned two nights running to cause more damage to property across the town, including the Grosvenor Hotel. It was a similar picture at Broughton, where cars parked at the Pound, Queenwood Road and the Square had windows smashed. The village shop was also targeted. Owner of Westview Stores, Bob Gillespie, said, "A pane of reinforced glass in one of the panels in our window had a hole through it. It looks like someone has used a hammer to crack the glass. I heard something in the early hours, but I didn't know what it was because I was half asleep. I didn't hear a car, though. Reports of damaged cars came in quick and fast in the morning across the village. It's been suggested that a catapult was used." The yobs also struck at Houghton, King's Somborne and Romsey, where the Cancer Research UK's shop in Church Street had a window damaged, along with Boots in the Hundred. Cars parked in Greatbridge Road, Palmerston Street, Church Street and Cherville Street in the town also suffered. These included a Mini, Audi, Hyundai and a BMW, all of which had windscreens smashed and other damage. Windows were also targeted in Palmerston and Church Streets. Police across the Romsey and Stockbridge areas received around 40 reports of damage, and officers also believed those responsible may have used a catapult to fire stones at their targets. Sergeant Russ Hodges, whose patch covers Stockbridge District, said, "We would like to hear from anyone who may have seen a dark-coloured hatchback car being driven around and things being thrown from it. I would also appeal to anyone who knows anything about this spate of damage and who may be responsible for it to get in touch. Anyone with information is asked to contact the police on 101. And there's a photograph of four very smart-looking staff at John Robinson peering out through their damaged window, and of staff at the Westview stores in Broughton standing looking at their taped-up window as well.
Interim bus service becomes permanent. An emergency interim bus service between Oslebury and Winchester is to become permanent. Exelbus surrendered their contract after a proposed retiming of the buses was rejected by Hampshire County Council. The service was quickly put out to tender and Stagecoach won the new contract for a three-day-a-week service, which civic chiefs now say will remain. A school service will be provided during term time. Councillor Sean Woodward, Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, said, "In considering the longer-term replacement contract, I have taken into account the usage and limited funds available. Passenger numbers were low, with an average of 10 passengers per trip, and surveys showed the majority of journeys were for shopping. To return to a 5 days-a-week service would result in the contract price increasing by 53%. I am therefore content that the school service and 3-day-a-week shopper service offers a regular and reliable bus service that meets current demand and should be maintained." Michael Cleary, Council Clerk, said on Tuesday, "Oslebury Parish Council understands what the county has done and we are going to work with them to find other forms of community transport so that the village does not become isolated." And there's a picture with this article of villagers queuing to make their feelings felt at the May 2014 elections.
Council hails success of its licensing policy. People come to Winchester because it feels safe. Winchester civic chiefs have hailed their licensing policy in recent years as a big success, reducing the problem of city centre disorder. The council has agreed a new policy for 2014-19 and dropped the special saturation policy that barred new licensed premises in Jury Street. Councillor Fiona Maver, chairman of the licensing committees, told the council that in 2003-04, Jury Street was very different in character to what it is today. "We had a couple of premises from which a large number of public order issues emanated. It was a challenge for the police. Jury Street is now largely restaurants. The police do not believe a saturation policy is appropriate." Councillor Malcolm Wright said, "We have seen a reduction in the number of people objecting to licences. We have a vibrant nightlife without the trouble seen in other districts. I would like to commend the officers for their work." Councillor Chris Pines said, "The pubs are not the problem. It is a large store selling extremely cheap alcohol to very young people and getting away with it. By the time a lot of youngsters come into town, they are thoroughly tanked up." But he added that many people come to Winchester from other places because it felt safe. Councillor Derek Green, who works at Tesco, responded, "The alcohol is not coming from the large stores. I am an employee, and I am on the tills at night, and I don't let them." Councillor Kelsey Lerney said, "As someone who has been drinking late in the city for 30 years, the streets are much safer and more pleasant now. It is important we are not negative about this." Councillor Maver later added, "This is about the changing nature of the Jury Street area and does not indicate the council is complacent about antisocial behaviour. The saturation policy for Jury Street is not an appropriate instrument to target this problem when it arises. We are grateful to the contribution of the street pastors for all they do to help."
Now we have a report on an interview with Maria Miller, the Minister for Culture, Media and Sport, who told a Winchester audience that she had the best job in government. "I look after the arts, theatre and beautiful places like Winchester Cathedral," she said. "I think we undersell the importance of arts in our country. They could be a turbo boost to the British economy." The cathedral, she said, was an astonishing building with 1,000 years of history. You can't go into it and fail to be moved. A magical place. Mrs. Miller was in business for 20 years, a company director for a large multinational advertising agency and a public relations agency, before her election as Conservative MP for Basingstoke in 2005. She is also the Minister for Women and Equality. She is a strong supporter of women bishops in the Church of England and expressed deep disappointment when the proposal was rejected by the Anglican Synod. She has also been the lead minister in supporting same-sex marriage. She was interviewed in the Guildhall on Friday evening by John Miller, who is no relation of hers, but he is the artistic director of the Winchester Dialogues. The series of conversations with leading figures from the church, arts and politics discusses the changing relationship between church and state and the challenge of faith in the 21st century. Under Mr. Miller's questioning, the minister raged over many controversial subjects. On the question of adoption and the inability of Catholic agencies to continue placing children because they object to same-sex marriage, Mrs. Miller acknowledged that the Catholic agencies often placed children who were very difficult to deal with, but she said the decision of Parliament was to place some children with same-sex couples. She later said that if anything happened whereby she and her husband were unable to bring up their children, she would be happy to have them brought up by same-sex or heterosexual couples. The important thing was that the children received love, she emphasised. The debate between the press and politicians on what should result from the Leveson inquiry had focused on the need for a royal charter. She believed in self-regulation of the press. "The last thing we want is politicians running the press," she said. Mrs. Miller has 3 children who attend Winchester schools, including pilgrims, and she spoke highly of the standard of the Anvil Theatre Basingstoke and Theatre Royal Winchester.
Amanda makes happy return to her roots. She's the ultimate hometown heroine for a Hampshire village. Fans grabbed a glimpse of Amanda Holden as she returned to Bishop's Waltham, where she spent much of her childhood. More than 100 people queued through the small town streets to get into Highland's store, a shop where the Britain's Got Talent judge used to work in her teens. Amanda was signing copies of her book, No Holding Back, and greeted old friends with hugs and kisses while starstruck residents reminisced. She said, "I burst into tears when I saw a girl who used to live at the top of my road. It's just been ridiculous. There has been a lot of people who are in my book here today, and it's like I have summoned them up. Then there were people who I didn't recognise at first, so I have basically just said, 'Do I know you?' to everyone." On being back in the shop, she added, "It feels the same. Maybe a bit posher than when I worked here, but it's got the same smell. I'm going to go and see if the staff room is as grim. I loved my time here and am glad to be back." Neil Channon, owner of Highlands, said it meant a lot that Amanda chose the shop as a book tour venue. "She could have gone anywhere, but she chose to come here. Not many people would do that." Amanda met people she used to babysit for, former teachers, neighbours, schoolmates, and even the woman who gave her a first taste of the stage in Bishop's Waltham Little Theatre. Angie Blackford, her theatre director, said, "I put her in the first panto Bishop's Waltham ever did, as a fairy. I gave her a song to do which she didn't like, but I made her do it anyway, and she got a rapturous applause. I said back then she would be a star and be in the West End, and I was right. She's been my star ever since. Valerie Dempsey, Amanda's former boss at the shop, added, Amanda used to come here after school. I think she's the same today as she was back then. Very sparkly, jubilant, and a bit over the top. And there's a picture of Amanda Holden outside Highland's store.
Old saints on hand to help home. Ex-Saints players were on hand to help a Winchester care home with its grand reopening. Jim Steele and Hugh Fisher of the 1976 FA Cup winning squad were joined by Jimmy Case, Mark Dennis and Dennis Hollywood at St Cross Grange in Winchester last Thursday. The Greensleeves Homes Trust Run Home was refurbished earlier this year, expanding from 29 rooms to 64 and upgrading its service to include nursing. Manager Terry Packer said, "It's very exciting. We have five nurses now with different specialities such as wound care or emergency care. We rarely need them, as we do have people living with dementia who need full-time nursing. We've also been incorporating animals and children into our work with residents and are working towards the Eden alternative, which is a Greensleeves philosophy to stop boredom, loneliness and helplessness." The Old Saints were on hand to open a new memory street, made to resemble a Winchester street to help dementia patients. Mr. Steele organised the ex-player's visit as his partner Jill Smith works at the home as a carer. Mr. Dennis added, "This place looks fantastic. As we get older, sometimes the feeling you get is you reach a certain age where you get put out to graze and no one looks after you. So it's great to see the high standards of homes like this." The Grange was a former military base during the Second World War, and staff invited Colonel Tom Hunt, who trained there in 1941, back to mark the occasion. Colonel Hunt, 96, of Dorset, who was returning to the site for the first time, said, "I was here for almost a year back when I was a gunner in the Royal Artillery. It's good to be back, and it's certainly bringing back a lot of memories for me." And the piece is illustrated by a photograph showing Chairman of the Trustees, David Ballard, with ex-Southampton Football Club players Mark Dennis, Jim Steele and Huey Fisher, with Chief Executive of Greensleeves Trust, Paul Newman, at the reopening of St Cross Grange Care Home in Winchester.
A little earlier in Belgarum, we heard a reference to Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. And this is a news report about that event. He was a work of fiction, but now his visit to Winchester has been immortalised for real. The deerstalker wearing Sherlock Holmes and his assistant Dr. Watson stopped off for luncheon with a Miss Violet Hunter in The Adventure of the Copper Beeches. They met at the Black Swan Hotel, which was demolished for road widening in 1935. The detective has proved enduringly popular, with renewed interest following the BBC TV series starring Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman, and the two Guy Ritchie-directed films starring Robert Downey Jr. and Jude Law. Winchester is hoping to capitalise by erecting a plaque on the building that replaced the hotel on the corner of Southgate Street and High Street. Black Swan Building also sports a wooden statue of a black swan, a replica of the one from the hotel. Local historian Chris Webb has been campaigning for 15 years for the literary link to be marked. "I think it will be of interest to the tourists," he said. "People stop to look and then maybe buy something. Folk worldwide know about Sherlock Holmes." Rob Humby, WCC deputy leader, said, "I expect this plaque to add another destination on the trail that already features the likes of Jane Austen and the poet John Keats." The £200 polished steel plaque funded by the council reads, The Black Swan above you is a replica of one which once adorned the Black Swan Hotel that stood here from the 19th century until 1935, when it was demolished and replaced by Black Swan buildings. The hotel was visited by Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson in Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's The Adventure of the Copper Beeches. After the unveiling, the party went to Blue's Cafe across the road, the old tap room of the hotel. Winchester features in another Holmes story, Silver Blaze, when the duo visited the racecourse that used to stand near Three Maids Hill. And there's a very jolly photograph of Ivor Bundell, Winchester City Council Head of Economy and Arts, dressed as Sherlock Holmes, and local historian Chris Webb as Dr. Watson. And there's also, of course, a picture of the plaque, although you can't read the plaque in the picture.
MP and agency back lion protection battle. Winchester business and political leaders rallied to support the battle to save one of the world's rarest animals. More than 100 people gathered in Westminster, including host MP Steve Brine and the Winchester-based marketing agency Remarkable Group, in aid of the Global White Lion Protection Trust, founded by author and conservationist Linda Tucker. White lions, which are scarcer than Himalayan snow leopards, are technically extinct in the wild, with only 500 remaining in captivity across the globe. MP Steve Brine said, "The whole area of conservation among threatened species and our environment was what inspired me to stop shouting at the TV and get active in political life in the first place, so this was an easy one for me to support. These white lions are truly beautiful, and there is definitely something spiritual about them. I'm going to work with Linda and the charity to help them wherever I can through my role in Parliament." Remarkable Group Chief Executive Stephen Pomeroy said, "We are thrilled to be able to support the essential work undertaken by the Trust. The team has worked hard in recent months to drum up support for this event and raise awareness of the Trust. It is fantastic to see such a successful outcome."
Rotary moves to aid typhoon victims. Winchester Rotary has committed 5 shelter boxes to help people affected by the typhoon in the Philippines. Each costs £590 and contains a disaster relief tent for an extended family, blankets, ground sheets, water storage and filtration equipment, cooking utensils, basic toolkit, children's activity pack, and other vital items. Rotary will mount a collection at Sainsbury's Badger Farm next Tuesday, November the 19th. Shelterbox, a Rotary partner project, is globally recognised as a charity best equipped and resourced to provide first response to such emergencies. Said Rotary coordinator Alan Darlington, "A great thing about it is that every box bears its own unique number, so the charity can monitor which donations are spent on which boxes. Donations are also possible via www.justgiving.com/Alan-Darlington or by text. Text the code WRSB99 plus your amount, £1, £2, £3, £5 or £10 to 70070.
Four directorships undeclared. The Hampshire Cabinet member, who dramatically quit last month, failed to declare she was a director of 4 companies, it has emerged. County Councillor Anna McNair Scott, who was due to decide the fate of 4 care homes across Hampshire, broke council rules by failing to fully disclose her interests. She handed in her resignation for what she called a genuine oversight. now the council's register of interest and gifts, has been updated to show she is a director of Midland Holdings Limited, Maritime Orient and Near East Agency, Skylon Enterprise, and Space Travel Investments Limited. For three of the companies, the only other director is her husband, Nigel, who is involved in a large number of enterprises, including the couple's 700-acre farm estate at Old Basing. Confusingly, the register also lists Councillor McNair Scott as non-executive chairman of Helical Bar PLC, a multi-million pound property and investments company with its HQ in Mayfair. In fact, the position is held by her husband, as she had previously declared. As reported, Council Leader Roy Perry accepted her resignation and said the decision over the four care homes will now be taken by the whole Cabinet. The homes threatened are Nightingale Lodge in Romsey, the Deeside Complex near Basingstoke, and Cranley Paddock Lyndhurst, the only specialist dementia unit in the New Forest. The council said it would cost £10 million to modernise the homes and plans to replace them with extra care apartments. The issue over a possible conflict of interest was raised by campaigners battling to save Deeside Complex. They accused Councillor McNair Scott of failing to reveal her husband was involved in property development, including extra care units, in Stratford-upon-Avon. Tony Hook, deputy leader of the UKIP group on the County Council, then discovered Councillor McNair Scott was a director of four companies, none of which she'd declared. Asked why she was now wrongly listed as non-executive chairman of Helical Bar, a council statement said it was not necessary to state or distinguish on the register between councillors' interests and those of their spouse or partner.
And those then were the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. Quite a mixed bag, I think. Let me just remind you once more that Lynn Parker should be called if you have any problems with your recording. I'm going to give you that number again, 01962 862 826. So we conclude by thanking our editors, Christine and Fredina, also the hard-working copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. Thank you to our readers, Claire.
Bye.
And Robin.
Bye.
Jerry.
Bye.
And from me, Roz. And the next time this team are reading, they will be led by Roy Faithful, who's standing in for me because I'm going on holiday. So this is my chance to wish you all a happy Christmas. And I hope I'm not the first one to do it. So thank you very much, everyone, and goodbye. Can you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible? And put the address label, of course, inside the wallet. Have a very, very good week, and thank you for listening.